about 2 months ago, and I'm looking at her going, I know this woman from someplace, but she was coming from the Mennonite church down the street, and I'm like, I don't know. And that's because when I met Vicki, she was at First Press. We met 10 years ago on a trip to the border to Agua Prieta and Douglas, Arizona. And at that point, we were coming face to face with the plight of migrants crossing the border. And so after a few days of not remembering, I was thinking, wait a minute, I know who she is. And so I am thrilled that we have reconnected in this space and that you can be here with us today.
This is just easier for me. Thank you, Claire. Thanks for having me here today. My name is Vicki Witte. I am a founding member of the Colorado Springs Sanctuary Coalition, and I lead the action and education teams. My involvement in the Sanctuary Coalition is a direct expression of my faith. I believe that Jesus was closest to the most vulnerable. Jesus was the most vulnerable when he came to earth. And so I believe that it is our duty, our responsibility, and our joy to also stand with the vulnerable. And I'm here to invite other brothers and sisters into this work along with me. Let's introduce our panel just very briefly. If you would say your name, what you do with the coalition, and sort of why you're here. Let's start with Pat. Oh, sorry.
I'm Pat Dolan, and I am a member of First Cong Downtown. I am a ordained minister. This work is important to me because I see the history of the United States as either forcing people to come here because we need them, their labor, or forcing them out because we want what they have. And that seems to be the two ways that we operate. And working on, I'm on the steering committee for the Colorado Springs Sanctuary Coalition, and it is important for me to be able to do something to try to be a part of the resistance against this oppression. And I believe that Jesus welcomes all.
My name is Stephanie Zagari. I am an immigration attorney here in Colorado Springs. I am, I guess, currently churchless. Although I was raised going to church, two or three times a week, and I was trained to, you know, memorize Bible verses in case I was ever a missionary in China and they took my Bible, and, you know, that was my only inspiration is whatever I had memorized. And so as an immigrant, I'll just say briefly that as an immigration attorney, someone would come into my office, I would analyze the situation, and I would say, okay, these are the things I might be able to do to help you, or these are the things that, you know, I there's nothing that I can do for you, I'm sorry. And I really initially saw my role as kind of ending there. And as I got more and more established in the Colorado Springs community and with the church that I used to go to, as I got involved with the Sanctuary Coalition, I really had the opportunity to get to know my clients as people with these huge, vibrant lives beyond just the legal problem that they were hoping I was going to be able to solve. And so that was a real education for me, and it kind of connected what I do in my current daily life back to some of that kind of initial teaching that I'd had when I was a kid about, welcoming people and loving people and valuing people who are members of my community and so on. And so with the Sanctuary Coalition, I primarily get involved when there's maybe a legal question or the coalition is looking at bringing someone into sanctuary, but I've really appreciated the opportunity to connect kind of the colder legal part of my, you know, of my life with the chance to really get to know and interact with the immigrant community and do what I can to make sure that I welcome as many members of that community as I can.
Hi, I'm Val Stevenson, and I'm a member of the Sanctuary Coalition, and I came on the coalition as a representative from one of the founding churches. That church subsequently pulled out of the coalition when some angry voices didn't want us to become a part. So I've stayed on and am right now homeless along with Stephanie for church. But my reason for being here is for my faith. I believe that we are told to love our neighbors, and our neighbors include the immigrant community. And I really feel like they've been under attack, and that as people of faith, that we should come together and protect our brothers and sisters and stand up for them. And so that's my main reason for being here today. And thank you for having us.
I'm Nancy Morlock Hollins, and Jeannie Harrington and I are the co-chairs of our mission group here at Vista Grande. I think the reason that we are very interested in this is because all of the missions which we have supported over the years are all relational. And so certainly being part of the Sanctuary Coalition is something where the gifts that we have to bring can be bestowed on people who will give in turn gifts to us in a different way.
Thank you very much to our panelists. I just want to give a very brief explanation because this is often misunderstood. The Sanctuary Coalition is a coalition of churches. Right now, this includes All Souls Church downtown, First Congregational Church downtown, and the Quaker Meeting House in Colorado Springs. A church does not have to be a physical sanctuary for immigrants in order to be part of the coalition. At this point, All Souls is the physical sanctuary church, but other churches are part of the coalition, and that means that we're all in this together. The churches offer support and volunteers, occasionally financial support. So just to clarify, you don't have to actually house an immigrant to be part of the Sanctuary Coalition. Okay, let's hear a little bit more from our panelists. Stephanie, I want to start with you. Please talk a little bit about the legal aspects of sanctuary and what sanctuary means to clients and their families. Why would anyone ever request sanctuary? Who wants to live in a church?
It's a good question. So one of the things that it's important to understand about our immigration system is that a lot of times there are no solutions. And so you may have, and we often do have, people who have lived here for a very long time, who have been members of our community for a very long time. A lot of times they kind of reach the end of the road of their legal options, and there's no solution, but they're also members of the community, their families are here. And so the Department of Homeland Security, which is the agency in the U.S. government that is in charge of immigration, specifically ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they have a policy of not raiding, for lack of a better word, not going into schools, hospitals, and churches. And I would say that the hospitals and the schools part has been maybe just a little bit shaky the last couple years especially. But so far, they have always respected the sanctity of the church. And I think when you think about it, I think most Americans would be pretty horrified at the idea of ICE agents entering a church and dragging somebody out. And so we have these people who have kind of no more legal options. And they have a community that's willing to support them and give them a safe place to live until we can kind of find some kind of legal option for them. Sometimes there literally are no options, like I mentioned. Sometimes there are options, but they're going to take years. Sometimes there's options, but it may take weeks. I myself represented an individual who was a candidate for sanctuary but ended up not seeking sanctuary, who had a pending possible solution. He'd lived here for like 25 years. His wife and kids had grown up here. But we didn't have an answer yet. And so sanctuary is a possible option as a place for him to live until we could get a final decision from immigration. I will say that to me, sanctuary is more of a moral res- a moral solution, a solution from a part, from a position of who are we, who do we want our community to be, who do we want our country to be. It's not written in the law, and it's not something that the law provides for. And so I do have a lot of respect for the communities that support individuals in sanctuary, because it's a way of saying, you know, the law in this case is not moral. I mean, the law is not who we as Americans, who we as a community want to be. And so we are giving this person protection because we think it's the moral thing to do, even if it's not what the law says in this particular case.
We're going to go to Pat next. Is a member of First Congregational Church, which is one of the churches in the Sanctuary Coalition. Pat, please tell us what it's like for someone from a church that's part of the Sanctuary Coalition, but not a physical sanctuary church. What role do members of coalition churches play?
The nice part, you know, that you don't have to be a sanctuary church. Not all churches are set up where you can provide, you know, shelter for someone for weeks or months or years. And so, as a member of the Sanctuary Coalition, we can, however, help educate. We can meet with, we have folks from First Cong that meet at, you know, we're at the meetings of the sanctuary, deciding what actions to take. The sanctuary has recently extended we're doing a trial right now, but I'm sure that it will continue on. Of accompaniment. And so that means that we go with folks to court. We go with them if they are looking for, we just had to call out for someone to go with an immigrant house hunting. And they speak English, the immigrant speaks English, but it's a little nerve-wracking with what's going on in today's world to go and try to find a place to live and talk to people. And so having someone with them is helpful for them. It becomes a little less frightening. And so that's the standing in solidarity. So our members get to stand in solidarity with folks and put in practice what we preach. There's also a financial component of if we can assist financially. There is also, for instance, you know, if there's someone in sanctuary where we have folks that are fixing meals and taking and maybe eating with the person every, you know, once a week or twice a week at lunch, if there's a celebration, we help plan the celebration. It is being active in the actual sanctuary that's at All Souls. But we can be active and volunteer. We've had people in sanctuary where someone needed to spend the nights, and because someone needed to be a presence in the church, then at All Souls. And so that's something that congregational members can do, is be there for safety, and that if ICE shows up, having an understanding of what to do and what the legal rights are. We also help promote training and education about the legal rights. And so that's something that we do with the congregation, is telling them, what are the legal rights? You know, how can we help? And quite frankly, the committee the coalition is so diverse and reaching out to all these other organizations that there is then opportunity for us, for like Colorado Rapid Response. And so if there's an ICE raid, of being trained to go down there and be there if there is an ICE raid, recording and assisting, if you're trained to that level, assisting and letting those folks know their rights, because a lot of them are so frightened that they don't know that they don't have to say anything to them. They don't know that they don't have to give them their name, their address. They don't have to talk to them, period. And that's an important right. And so it's being both actively involved, it's being financially supportive, and it's seeing other opportunities to help and be a part of the solution. And so that, as far as a church, we're, you know, despite not being a place of sanctuary, because we don't have the facility and the showers and, you know, things like that, you're still a very active part of the sanctuary.
Thank you, Pat. Let's go to Val. Val, if you could briefly tell us how your journey has influenced or intersected with your participation in the Sanctuary Coalition.
Well, as I said before, I am a person of faith and had attended a church downtown that was a member of the Sanctuary Coalition. And for me, it became difficult to stay at the church because when, I guess to frame the background, members of the church really didn't find out that the church was a member of the Sanctuary Coalition in a good way. It came out in the Gazette before our pastor had mentioned it, and a lot of people were upset that our church had entered into that. And when people had gotten upset at the church, our pastor decided to back out and wanted to give time to educate other members. And for me, where it really intersected was originally I stayed and said, I will help and I will educate, but I wanted to do it faster than our pastor did. And basically, you know, let's get everybody in a theater and let's talk about this. Let's bring up scripture. Let's find out why you're afraid of this or why you're against this. And basically, it was more like, well, you can have people come to your house, like eight at a time, and most of them are going to be pro. And I was like, you know, I just can't do it that way. So I had ended up leaving the church and putting more of my efforts into the coalition. But for me, what it really hit was when I had talked with my pastor, who I do love and respect and know he's in a difficult situation, was that, you know, taking the time to educate that people will be deported a year from now. And I was like, but that's a privilege I have as being a citizen and being white that a lot of my brothers and sisters don't have. And I just did not think it was right to sit on the sidelines and allow my privilege of let's just educate everybody and see if they'll come around to the viewpoint that I believe we are to be obedient to Christ. And so that's kind of why I left and put more of my efforts into that. And so I feel like it's a responsibility in obedience to Christ.
Thank you, Val. Nancy, how do you see that Vista Grande Church potentially joining the Sanctuary Coalition could be beneficial for both the church and the coalition?
Well, first of all, I think that the easy part is if we are involved in the coalition and we do have the privilege of helping people, whether it's at All Souls or in other positions, I think all of us, and I mean all of us in here, that they will not find any judgment, that they will find acceptance. They may not speak Spanish. They may want to learn. Some of us here want to learn. I see Marina here. Exciting. That there are so many gifts that we already have struggled with and give now freely with our hearts. The part that I think is going to be harder for us is actually how are we going to live that life? Because I think most of us here in this room believe that we don't worship Jesus, just worship Jesus. We follow Jesus. And to follow Jesus into the marginalized community, into the Latinx community specifically, can be dangerous. Even though we're living into our humanity, we have to know that we have to be able to take that step. And I think that what we can do here is we can support each other in doing that and in making a decision of how we are going, because it's not going to look just like First Congregational. It's not going to look like just anything, but it's going to look like us. And that's what we have here, is we have a safe place to talk with each other about our fears, about our hopes and our dreams, and that's what I look forward to.
Thank you. I'm going to let you hold on to it. We would like to open up some time for discussion and hear what questions you might have. If you have a question, please raise your hand. I'll bring the Claire, one of us will bring the microphone around. You may address it to one of the panelists or just leave it wide open. So, questions.
I will quickly say that the last church we were part of became a physical sanctuary church while we were there, and it was a really positive experience. Nobody's actually had to go there yet because it's not a very heavily undocumented and immigrant populated city. But anyway, that was a positive experience. How many times in, say, since November 2016 has somebody needed sanctuary in Colorado Springs?
So I think that's a really good question. I will say that there are probably lots and lots of people that have needed sanctuary. I think the Sanctuary Coalition has only taken in 3 individuals. And each one of those cases was somewhat unique. I think the coalition learned a lot from each from each individual that was there. And I think there's a huge need. I mean, when the last individual was looking at sanctuary, I think there were actually 3 different applicants who all had the need. The coalition just could only offer protection for one. And there are other churches that have. Well, I don't think there's any other physical sanctuary churches in Colorado Springs, but in Colorado, there's several, and so. In the beginning, we actually took someone from another community who needed sanctuary. I think going forward, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're focused on trying to specifically help members of our community because it seems like it's a better and more powerful experience for everyone all around.
I have a personal question for Stephanie.
Yes, ma'am.
30 years ago, we came to this country from Canada, and so we were on a NORAD agreement, and with the help of an immigration lawyer, got our green cards, and eventually I became a citizen. My sons have chosen their partners of other countries, and so they're in various stages of green card or citizenship. How do I morally agree with all of this. Legally, I'm having an issue because if I get asked the question, which I've had to write up a lot for one of our daughters-in-law to get her green card, if I'm asked the question, if I've been involved in any illegal action. How do I respond to that?
So I think that is a fabulous question. And actually, when Vicki asked me about kind of the legal stuff, I realized, oh, I didn't even talk about harboring, which I probably should have talked about. Mm-hmm. I think that there is a very valid concern, and you didn't use the word harboring, but I think this is essentially kind of what you're asking, because it is. I'm just going to use the word of the statute. This wouldn't be my language, but it is illegal to harbor an illegal alien. And every attorney that I have ever spoke to on this issue would agree that harboring usually requires hiding someone, for example, not letting the authorities know that that they're there, what we refer to as human trafficking. So maybe you're carrying, you're transporting groups of people from here to there. most attorneys are pretty, I would say every attorney that I've ever spoke to has been pretty united in the legal opinion that housing someone in sanctuary is not harboring. One of the things that we always do when we take someone in is we notify ICE, for example. This person will not be coming to their next appointment because they are now in sanctuary at such and such church. We make sure that the individual in sanctuary has an attorney so that if ICE wants to communicate with them or has any questions, they have a point person to talk to. And then the other thing that the Sanctuary Coalition has done, which I think has been really, really good, is to have a meeting with the church community kind of specifically about these are the laws, here's the section of the statute that talks about this, and kind of this is our perspective on why we think that this is permissible under the law. I am not aware of any examples of either a church or the individuals in the church having any kind of legal problems related to accepting someone in sanctuary. I don't think it's an illegal act for a church to accept someone into sanctuary because it's not harboring. It is a kind of protest, but I think that our legal system allows for that kind of protest. And I'll even say I'm not aware of any of our individuals that we've had in sanctuary suffering any kind of additional negative consequences because they've been in sanctuary. And I don't know if anyone else has anything to add.
I just want to clarify the question. Are you saying that if you, as a member of this church, participate in the Sanctuary Coalition, will you be able to answer, I am not doing anything illegal?
I think the short answer is yes. You could, in good conscience, say I am not doing anything illegal or I'm not supporting anything illegal, and I do think that if Vista Grande were to become a member of the coalition, I'm sure part of that would be training and education on what the law says, and to kind of help arm you with responses should anyone have any questions.
This question is for Pat or Val. In relationship to what the Sanctuary Coalition is doing right now in Colorado Springs, and looking at the resources that you have, are there certain resources that you could benefit from that don't exist or that you see the coalition needing to expand on?
Need to start. Well, I would say, one, in this last case, we do have All Souls that does provide sanctuary, but the more people that we can get out to even try to get other churches to come on board and get other people aware, like educationally, and also we now have the accompaniment program where we have a lot of immigrants that do need assistance, like going into court. So the more help that we can have in that end, and I do think it looks more powerful, the more that we can have churches come on board and say, we are together in solidarity on this, because, you know, right now there's three churches, and really when we started, the only church was the church I was from that had showers and all that kind of stuff. Basically, All Souls ended up getting donations and building a shower. But our first guest had to bathe in a sink for months. So to me, I feel like the more the merrier. But
well, and I would also say that there has been a lot of discussion about what else we can do, because we realize that if we only do sanctuary, it's one person at a time, and there are times that we have not had anyone in sanctuary, so what are we doing? You know, we're sitting around meeting and going, okay, if someone comes in, so that's why we extended it to, we're going to have accompaniment. And so we already are doing that and doing accompaniment. And it is to court, and it is known that if someone goes to a hearing and there are people, white people, not what they call the legal people with them, they feel like they have more of a community and they are more likely to walk out of that building. And so that is part of the seriousness of it. And we've talked a lot about it's really being like a friend to them, in that if they need help with understanding the grocery system, understanding the, you know, how we do things, understanding, you know, and not being frightened to go places and to learn, you know, that just that extra person there, if you go in with a friend, it's a lot easier. And because a lot of them are so fearful all the time of their safety, you know, it's even hard sometimes to get folks in for the training on what are your rights, because they don't know if ICE is going to show up, wait outside the door. And so the more people we have surrounding them, the less likely it is that they will disappear. And it's someone speaking up that has privilege that they don't have.
I just want to let folks know who don't know already, there have been trainings here already that you have conducted. We have had a rapid response training. We have had an accompaniment training. And not part of what you all do, but we've had DACA have their meeting here also. So we're already involved. Surprise!
Yes, thank you. I want to piggyback onto Vale's answer. The church in the United States does still have a moral voice. I know it may not always seem like that, and we often hear from one side. We hear the loud voice, and I believe it's very important for the other side to also speak up and say, we stand with immigrants. We stand with the most vulnerable and the marginalized. And the church does still have that voice, but we need more churches to join in that chorus.
We need the churches to follow.
A little broader question is, would you comment on the concept and where we might be from a local point of view in terms of sanctuary cities, the idea of sanctuary cities?
Well, so I think that what sanctuary city is sort of the short version for the idea that the police, or law enforcement, I guess I should say, is going to focus on law enforcement, not on immigration, and that the community, the city, I guess, feels that it's in the best interest of the city to focus on law enforcement and not necessarily working closely with ICE. We have kind of a long and complicated history in Colorado Springs on this issue. I guess there's a couple things that come to mind. Initially, when Terry Makita was our sheriff, we had what was called a 287G agreement, which meant that the sheriff's deputies that worked at the local jail were essentially also deputized ICE officers. And what that meant is that they had special training to kind of recognize patterns in, you know, what likely means someone is undocumented, and then they could sort of process that person for ICE without ICE even having to come to the jail. So Sheriff Elder ended the 287G agreement, which was a good thing, also probably the necessary thing, because the ACLU had filed a bunch of lawsuits and sheriffs were being held liable if they didn't end the 287G agreement. And then there was a lawsuit by the ACLU against the sheriff's department, which sort of further separated the sheriff from ICE. You know, just in my experience as an immigration attorney, I have had fairly positive interactions with the Colorado Springs Police Department as far as helping my clients, especially when they were victims, and not particularly looking into the immigration issues. But I think it's hard to hold them up as a positive example these days. So I guess I will just say that I think we have some elements of kind of the sanctuary city thing going on, but I think that's more statewide and not necessarily, I don't know, I'm not quite sure what to say. There have been some good things, there have been some bad things. It's hard for me to get enthusiastically behind our law enforcement, but I do want to recognize the things that they've done.
I would like everybody to know that there is an organization here that is trying to make it more formal, that law enforcement not be involved with anything with ICE. And what's interesting is that their name is very similar to Sanctuary Coalition, but there's this Sanctuary City Coalition. So please look them up on the internet. So I know they exist, and I thought they were going to have some kind of fundraiser towards the end of the month. I'm not sure, but they are active, because we do have a lot of issues with fear in the community, where people don't want to report when they're a victim of a crime if they're undocumented, because then it could turn, instead of getting assistance from the law enforcement, they're going to be targeted by ICE. There is a movement in place.
I'm going to take one more question. Well, two, because it's Leah's last day. God. We'll take two more, and then clearly if there is room for more discussion here, then we would need to follow up with another opportunity for folks to come and talk some more. So I'm going to go to Audrey first, and you'll be the last but not least. How's that?
Could you clarify, you mentioned that there's room for one in sanctuary now. What are the limitations? And, you know, it seems a shame that there was a time it sounded like you had three who were in need but could only take one. Could you kind of explain more about that?
It's currently because we only have in our church membership one church, and they really only have room for one guest at a time. So if we had more churches come on board that would be willing to offer housing and offer sanctuary, then we could take in more. But right now we're limited to the one. Yeah, well, and we even started without a shower before, but no, it's a place, to be honest, at All Souls, basically the pastor there ended up putting a bed in her office originally, because when we had the need, originally they were like, we put this off for a few weeks because their basement flooded. And so the area that they had planned to use as a room for sanctuary was not available. So basically they just, which kind of annoys me, because as a community that has some very large churches that do have plenty of room and showers and everything, this church stepped up and said, okay, I'm going to put a bed in the pastor's office. And we even jerry-rigged like a camp shower downstairards. So they made it work. And just my two cents was, I didn't know much about Unitarians at all. And when I spent a night there, I was like, there's no Bible. You know, I didn't even know what they did. And, yeah, I know, pretty naive. But anyway, you know, I met people at that church that were atheists that basically said, this is the right thing to do. And it just blew my mind that at a church that I'd been going to for 30 years, that had Bibles in the pews and had Sunday school classes and had a shower, said no. So I'm sorry, that I got off.
Don't talk like that here.
Okay.
I just want to add also that not everyone that asks for sanctuary is admitted into sanctuary, because there is a vetting process. And so, and we've learned a lot about that process, and it has grown of what information we need to know and what questions to ask and things like that. So there is a vetting process, because it's important that they're safe, the church is safe, everyone's safe. So,
Val, you know I was teasing.
What'd you say?
I was teasing.
Oh, okay. Just
talk like that all the
time.
No.
So kind of going off of that, how do you currently reach out into this community to offer up the other options for assistance?
The accompaniment? Is that kind of what you're...
For the people that don't necessarily need sanctuary but need other kinds of assistance that you are currently offering up, how are you reaching out into this community?
Great question. Currently, the accompaniment is a pilot program. We are working with 3 immigration attorneys in town, and Stephanie is one of them. So these 3 immigration attorneys are the ones that sort of vet and then refer the clients to us. We are also doing, we are meeting with church, with Spanish-speaking churches, and letting those communities know one-on-one that we exist, that we're available, that we are eager to help. And we hope that maybe in January, I mean, we have to do an evaluation of the pilot program and all of that, but hopefully early in the next year, we will make this more even broadly known. And we do work with a lot of other, like the DACA group, Colorado Immigrants Rights Coalition. There are several local groups in town that we also reach out to get the word out.
Thank you. We could be here all day, amen? I think it's important for us when we are going to be a beacon for justice, especially in the sacred season of Advent, that we recognize the need from facts, from what's really happening, from boots on the ground, so that our involvement isn't just some sort of ethereal understanding of what it means to be a Just Peace Church. I would like to thank our guests this morning. We're still morning, right? And before we move into our parade, I would like to offer a prayer, please.